Welcome to the Post-Christian Podcast, where we help you make disciples in our increasingly post-Christian world. My name is Eric Bryant. I'm one of the executive pastors at Gateway Church in Austin, Texas, along with the founder of Catalyzing Community. You can go to ericbryant.org to sign up for my email newsletter to receive free resources. On this episode of the Post-Christian Podcast, I have with me Daniel Yang. How you doing, Daniel?
Hey, Eric. I'm really good, man. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Well, you're in a new role there at World Relief. I think when we first met, you were at the Billy Graham Center at Wheaton College, and would love to hear even some of your work there. But tell us what you're doing at World Relief.
Yeah, you know, I came on as of this recording about 4 months ago to launch a movement of churches we're calling Churches of Welcome, which is essentially helping the church in America to better be engaged in terms of welcoming immigrants and refugees. And so, you know, which is a tradition that churches have had for a long time, but things get complicated with politicians and elections. And so really what we're doing is we're launching a discipleship journey for churches so that they can respond biblically, compassionately, but also missionally.
You know, some of our best leaders were kids in the 70s or 80s who found faith, their parents found faith as they immigrated over here. And these churches opened their arms and embraced these families. And now there is, unfortunately, a political angle to immigration and serving immigrants that there wasn't, you know, even among the most conservative churches a few years ago. Obviously, you and I both would land in that category of we're supposed to love our neighbor wherever they're from. But maybe on the positive side, what are some ways you're seeing churches effectively serve, love, and bring into the community those who've immigrated from somewhere else?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right, Eric. I'll start with my own personal story sort of as a microcosm, because this continues to happen over and over again. And you hinted at it. My family, we came to the United States as refugees in 1979. And at the time, you know, the refugee resettlement program in the U.S. was not as sophisticated and federalized as it is now. And so a lot of sponsorship was private sponsorship, and a lot of the sponsorship were local churches. My family was sponsored through a little Lutheran church in East Moline, Illinois. And my dad was about 40 at the time when they became refugees. And through the love of that little church, they became followers of Jesus for the first time. Hmm. Because in that era of refugee resettlement, the church became sort of all things that the family needed, end-to-end English services, job placement, spiritual needs. And so really a holistic approach. And, you know, I think about my dad being the first person with our DNA to be a follower of Jesus, forever changed by the love of that little local church. And that story, like you said, plays out in different eras of America, because in the late 70s, it was the Vietnamese, Hmong, Cambodian, as when we came. You know, later you see a lot of Eastern Europeans because of the fall of the Soviet Union. And so very similar stories over and over again. And then, you know, most recently over the last 20 years, the Latino American migration that's happened, and which is a little bit different than the refugee issue, but at the same time, seeing just stories of transformation. And so today, still, even, you know, in 2024, the church is one of the best and most compassionate welcomers of new arrivals. And that's a longstanding tradition that the church has had here in America.
It's a beautiful thing when the church lives out what the church is supposed to be doing. But the church I'm a part of here at Gateway, I think it was about 15 years ago, adopted a family that had come from Burma, and really we were serving refugees before it was cool or before it was uncool, depending on who you ask. And we just kept doing it. And what's really beautiful is that one couple has now started an international church where they're serving folks from all over Asia with hundreds of people that are finding faith and community. We've since adopted families from Syria that had just come over. talk about what World Relief does to equip churches who want to be welcoming churches. How are you able to help churches really take advantage of the fact that people who do not know Jesus are moving here?
Yeah. One of the journey that we take churches on is crafted around a learning experience and then an actual tangible experience and then sort of a serving experience and then kind of a lead or multiplying experience. And not all churches kind of come into the journey sort of, you know, in a linear fashion. Different churches kind of come into that journey at a different place, but a lot of folks still need a lot of education around, you know, the different kinds of immigrants that have come to America. What's an asylum seeker? What's a refugee? What is a migrant? And so there's a lot of learning around that. And then also, what's the biblical theology behind welcoming and hospitality? And so Welcoming the Stranger, which is a book that my colleague and friend, Matt Sorens, he's also my neighbor. He lives about 8 minutes from me. He wrote that with Jenny Yang as a way to help churches think theologically, but also missiologically around the issue. And so, and then they also better understand how to track with official terms that essentially our government uses. So you can kind of map like how the church can respond to how the government is responding. And then the experience process is usually just helping a church like make their first connection. A lot of churches know of their refugee or immigrant neighbors, but they've not yet had the opportunity to develop deep relationships. And so we help facilitate that. But then there are churches like yours that are ready to really provide a holistic response. And so through our Good Neighbor Teams initiative, we actually help pair churches with refugee families so that you can walk alongside of them as they settle. And I mean, what makes World Relief really kind of unique, there's only 10 resettlement agencies that are approved by the United States. And ours is the sort of the humanitarian arm of the National Association of Evangelicals. So people get to show and share the love of Jesus unreservedly. And it's, you get to make the gospel connections in a very tangible, but also you get to share the gospel in a very real way. And then we also help churches who feel like you were saying about the couple in your church. Churches get to the point and they realize that, you know what, we are actually a highly immigrant community and we want to develop our own ministries so that we can sustain our own ministries around helping our neighbor. And then we also help churches think through some of those things.
It's beautiful. I love the way you're helping these churches that are really trying to be the hands and feet of Jesus and they're part of the world. Worldrelief.org is the website. You guys do lots of really great things. How important do you think it is for a church that's trying to reach a more post-Christian world to be actively involved in issues of justice and humanitarian you know, serving those that are in a midst of difficult seasons of life? How important do you see that to our witness?
Yeah, you know, I love how you said your church, you know, you guys were doing this work before it was cool and even after when it stopped being cool, because there is a very real sense that sometimes people engage in these issues because it's actually what's on the cable news networks, right? I mean, if you go to any major news outlet right now, this issue of immigrants and immigration is front and center. I mean, it's the number two topic that Americans are saying are important in the next next presidential nominee. And so there is a bit of relevancy in that, you know, this is a really big issue. Like, we are in the largest humanitarian crisis that the world has seen. Mm-hmm. Over 118 million displaced people. You know, I mean, like, we've never seen that level of displacement. You think about when my parents came to the United States in the 1970s, and displacement was somewhere around like 15 to 20 million people. And it's exponentially increased. Wow. Over the last four decades. And that number continues to increase. I mean, we all know what's happening in Gaza and then Afghanistan, Ukraine. Those are some of the more sort of, you know, up front and center displacements, but all over the world, it's happening. And so when churches are providing both a compassionate and a missional evangelistic response, I think what it says to the world, especially to a non-believing world, is we care for the most important things in the world. We care for human trafficking. We care for equity in terms of, socioeconomic equity. But we also care about the most vulnerable people arriving in our neighborhoods every day. There isn't one particular political solution to this, right? There, like, the political solution is not the biblical solution. Mm-hmm. However, the biblical solution in which the church is responding to the needs and then to also what God is doing, oftentimes behind people on the move, is a part of us saying to our governmental systems that, hey, we are here for you. Despite your brokenness, we're here to be a part of the solution. And I think in a lot of ways, you don't even have to call that social justice. It's what the church has always been good at doing. It's what the church did in the first century when there was, outright persecution, and the church was there to help. And the church was there when there was famine, and the church was there when there was war. It's always been the posture of the church. And so I think the opportunity that we have right now, especially in what's probably, I don't know when this episode is going to get released, but what's probably going to be a highly contentious presidential election, is sort of to cut through the rhetoric and say, we want to be first responders in this humanitarian crisis.
I think that's an important distinction. This is not inviting churches to jump into the political arguments. This is, what do we do with the people who are here, however they got here? Some are in desperate need. Certainly many come through legal channels, of course, but you've pastored, helped plant churches, Dallas, Detroit, Toronto, Chicago. You're the director of the Church Multiplication Institute. Talk about, from your perspective, how a church that maybe hasn't gotten involved quite yet could take those next steps, and what you see it doing in the lives of the people in that church.
Yeah. You know, I mean, my journey from church planting, and I still see myself very much in that church multiplication space, has felt like a natural transition to me in a lot of ways, because for a long time in the multiplication space, Eric, I've been telling folks that, you know, the church that's arriving in America is a part of what God is doing to renew and revitalize the American church. Statistically, that's true. I mean, if you look at mainline Protestantism, which is probably the fastest declining, you know, neck and neck with Catholicism in America, a large part of it is its failure to integrate the immigrant population into its traditions. Evangelicals, you know, churches that would believe a lot of the same things that my church and your church would believe in, the Bible, evangelism, social action, evangelicals have sort of been staving off decline. And it's largely because of the church from around the world that has arrived at a doorstep. One in four immigrants that come to the United States, regardless of which path, they tend to be Christian. And so, and a part of that is helping to renew the American church. The denomination that I planted churches with, the Southern Baptists, in the last 5 to 7 years, over half of its churches that it planted were non-Anglo churches, many of them immigrant churches. The Assemblies of God, which is probably the only evangelical denomination that has grown year after year over the last 30 years. So, you know, you constant up and to the right in terms of like numerical mm-hmm. growth, has largely grown because of its Latino population. In fact, there's a stat that sometimes I'll use. In 2001, the numbers of members that affiliated themselves or identified as white in Assemblies of God was 1.8 million. Fast forward to 2019, the same number of people who identified as white in Assemblies of God was 1.8 million. All of the noticeable growth were non-white people, and largely Latino immigrants. Sometimes when I say this, people can kind of hear sort of the kind of great replacement theory, and it's not that. It's not that. A part of the socioeconomic systems of the world in some ways have caused this push and pull factor. In missiology, they say people come here because we first went over there, that there's these natural pipelines that we've developed over the years because of international policy that has allowed this exchange of people to happen, because America is just as present in some of these nations as they are in our nation. But when you pull back sort of kind of the social factors and the political factors, you begin to see like what's actually happening, you realize that God is actually behind all of this. God is behind people on the move. Missiologists call this the modus Dei. It's the movement of God. God is behind people on the move. And so the question is, how do churches connect into that? And for the least initiated, for many of the churches that I work with that are sort of kind of coming into this conversation, it really is helping to facilitate table spaces and living room spaces where people can meaningfully have conversations and learn mutually. There's a mutual transformation that happens. As a matter of fact, I would almost argue that it's hard to share the gospel in a very relevant way unless you have some version of mutual transformation between some of your church members and some of your new arrival neighbors. And when you share meals, you share a table together. The technical term is, for those who like jargon, is commensality. It's a transformation that happens around a dinner table. We try to help churches facilitate as many of those opportunities as possible, because that's a part of the mutual transformation. And then from there, you begin to see sort of kind of this escalation into evangelism. And then you see a lot of immigrant church planting happen because of that that commensality that takes place.
Well, I love that new word for all of us that haven't heard it before, but just the intentionality of relationship, which is what the gospel has always spread through. I want to just shift for a moment to Inalienable, the book you co-wrote, subtitle, How Marginalized Kingdom Voices Can Help Save the American Church. This will be part of our giveaway in the next newsletter. You can sign up for that at ericbryant.org. But talk a little bit about this book. What were some of the key insights that you guys share?
Yeah, when Matt and Eric approached me, so it's co-authored by two good friends of mine, Eric Costanzo, who pastors a South Tulsa Baptist church in Oklahoma, and then Matt Sorens, who's vice president of advocacy and policy at World Relief. It was really kind of three friends just kind of working through some experiences that we've had with churches, coaching churches. And then also working with immigrant populations. At the time, I was still at the Church Multiplication Institute at Wheaton College. And so much of my work was primarily around trying to think about future trends that are going to impact church planting and churches. And so that was largely my work. But because my personal background was from an immigrant family, and I live in a highly immigrant neighborhood, there was a lot of kind of natural connections with the topic of this book. And what we were trying to do with Inalienable, where we were trying to kind of make more explicit some of the things that we already see, that these are positive factors that sometimes don't get front and center attention in sort of our evangelical spaces, of what God is doing sort of from the periphery in terms of helping to renew and replenish and then to also revitalize American Christianity. And so we sort of provocatively said, you know, how God is helping to save the American church with marginalized voices. And mainly similar to what I was saying about like how immigrants are helping to stave off church decline, that there have been things from sort of the ancient church tradition. There have been things from the minority communities, you know, within American evangelicalism, and then also from the global church. And when I say global church, not necessarily immigrants, but what's happening in the church in Africa, what's happening in the church in Latin America, that these are lessons learned that we can actually in an appropriate way, we can appropriate what God is doing around the world as a means of reflection. How is God at work around the world? And not how do we make those things happen here, but how do we observe those things and ask, like, you know, who are we as a church in America today? What are some of the things that just have become so familiar that it's probably more tradition and culture than it is kingdom and biblical? How do we leave some of those things behind? And how do we actually pursue the new things that God might be doing, or the ancient things that God has continued to do throughout the centuries? And so we're trying to uncover some of these things. And honestly, Eric, when we wrote the book, we realized that there were a lot of really good books that were trying to unpack sort of how the church lost its way in America, if you want to use that term. And we were saying, you know, a lot of those folks we agree with and we appreciate their ministry. We wanted to carve a path out for folks to have an imagination for what a hopeful future could be like.
It's a beautiful thought. Thank you for your work helping the church to become more like the church is called to be, a place known for loving our neighbor. Keep up the great work, Daniel. Really grateful for the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Eric.
Thanks for joining us on the Post Christian Podcast. More resources available at ericbryant.org.